Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
It is now 8:10 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You are listening to Steele Talkin', and I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. We will not have the Mom and Michael Hour tonight or next Sunday night.
Aww.
I know. Boo-hoo for me, too. I know, honey.
What is going on?
Michael is so busy right now, girl. He's got so much going on, and I have to tell everybody about it eventually, but... you know, pray for him. He really misses being on the show. Now, I will say this tonight. We have got some really great guests because there's so much to talk about in the news. And we're actually talking about good news this half hour. Because I don't know if you've heard, Shaletta, this past week we found out just how much money we gave to charity last year. And it was a pretty big number. It was a bigger number than I expected.
Really?
So Jeremy Wells, Vice President of Philanthropic Services for the St. Paul and Minnesota Community Foundations, is joining us to talk about this subject tonight. Welcome to WCCO, Jeremy.
Thank you.
Okay, so tell us a little more about what you do and how you measure success, because there are a lot of variables that enter what you do.
Sure, yeah. I have the good pleasure of serving as the Vice President of Philanthropic Services at the St. Paul and Minnesota Community Foundations, and we work primarily with individuals, organizations, and corporations that are looking to have that charitable impact in community, partnering with a community foundation that helps to bring some of their expertise to the front as well, and we've got a track record of about 80 years of doing that successfully here.
Yeah, when the president changed the tax code, and all of our heads were spinning because, you know, basically it took away the giving deduction. Now, a lot of Americans like to give, but we also give for a reason, you know, if you can get that deduction, because there are so few deductions. However, you know, we wondered what would happen to communities in need who rely on the generous giving of Americans. And I didn't know if this increase was the Trump effect. Do you know?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, it's hard to draw a line of causation for any of these things. You know, we're looking at numbers, you know, from, you know, oftentimes the early part of the Trump presidency, you know, and it's hard to say. Taxes certainly are not the main reason people give. We know that. Studies show that time and time again, but I think taxes impact when people give and how much they give, how often they give, things like that. So I think what you're seeing here is a continuation of a lot of generosity in the U.S. And, you know, here in Minnesota, we certainly have seen that for years and will continue to see it for years to come, in my mind.
You know, there was a report that shows statistics from the Giving USA 2018, the annual report on philanthropy for the year of 2017. And it was published by Giving USA Foundation, who researched it and wrote it by the Indiana University Lilly Family School of Philanthropy. Now, it said there, let me give you this quote, giving to tax-exempt organizations in the United States last year grew by more than 5% to $410.02 billion. Eclipsing the $400 billion for the first time ever, riding a wave of a strong stock market and the philanthropic responses to a series of natural disasters. 5% may not seem like much to a lot of people, but when we are talking billions of dollars, it's a whole lot of moolah, right?
Absolutely. I mean, I think we have to celebrate the 5% growth and be pleased about that. $410 billion is a lot of money to charity. At the same point in time, you know, I'm certainly an advocate that we need to grow faster than that, especially when the stock market during that same year grew by 20%. And
right.
So that's where I think certain organizations are maybe finding more success than others. You know, what the study doesn't lean into as much with the headline is that fewer people are contributing on an annual basis. And so we're really trying to figure out how can we get more people to the table contributing annually? What can we do to help encourage that philanthropy? How can we demonstrate success and impact in community? And I think one of the biggest things that we can do in the sector is helping to retain donors from one year to another.
Okay, so the change in the tax code, did it make a big difference, a big drop-off of people?
Well, you know, it's hard to say. The tax code just changed this year. Most philanthropy happens in the fourth quarter of the year. So honestly, at the community foundations where we serve, we haven't seen any drop yet.
Okay.
And it might be a year to 2 years before we're seeing much. The only thing we're hearing from our donors directly is that they're contemplating maybe not giving on an annual basis, you know, with the doubling of the standard deduction, they might give every second or third year, give more, and then use a donor advised fund that they can use through us to make that impact in community on an annual basis, but also leverage the new tax code to only take that, you know, deduction once every second or third year.
You know, we have so many more millionaires, billionaires, and now they're even talking we might actually have a trillionaire for the first time. It blows my mind just to even think about that. But I also wonder, if we have more people making more money, are they giving because they want to give, not because they need to give to get that deduction?
Well, I think altruism, you know, at the end of the day is still the reason why people give. As people make more money, you would hope that they give away more, and you're certainly seeing that with some of these mega gifts. I think in 2017, these most recent numbers, we had two gifts of $1 billion mm-hmm. to different charitable organizations, and you're seeing that, you know, the ceiling of the height of people's giving, that certainly has continued to go up and up. The challenge is, I think, more and more people are dropping off the bottom, and you know, I think we need to advocate for things like a universal charitable deduction so everyone has that opportunity and incentive, if you will, to contribute. Because we know so many people, regardless of your income level or socioeconomic status, people are charitable. And yeah. It just doesn't always show up, unfortunately, in studies like this.
And I'm really grateful that students are really learning to be charitable as well. You know, I know my son and my daughter went to Catholic schools for high school, and boy, did they have to give and make a difference. And if they couldn't give financially, they gave in other ways. And so I do love that we have, you know, students coming up that are used to giving, used to being participating in some nonprofits. And so I'm hoping that this will carry through the next generation. Are you seeing that more young people, even college students, will find a way to give?
Yeah, so that gives me a lot of promise. I have three kids myself between the ages of 11 and 17. And what I'm seeing out of them, and actually that generation that's in college or just early into the workforce, they remind me a lot of the Greatest Generation in terms of their thought processes. You know, they really truly believe they can change the world, yeah. whether it's through philanthropy, through technology, through their business work. And they're getting involved in a number of ways. It's not just giving of their dollars, it's giving of their time. They want to get their hands dirty. They want to get engaged. And so I have a lot of hope and optimism for the future with these younger generations. And with the way that wealth is accumulating faster nowadays, I think it bodes well for the future. But I don't think we should wait around for that to happen. We need to lean into that as much as we can in the coming years to make sure that there's a fertile environment for that change to take place when they're ready to dive in a little deeper.
Yeah, when you talk about getting your hands dirty, I mentioned earlier the research that attributed this increase to the stock markets as well as a series of natural disasters. Do you agree with that? Because, you know, we've got natural disasters that are happening right now, and Americans are very giving. We believe in helping out our neighboring countries as well as, you know, far-flung countries. And so that makes me feel even better about it. But do you agree with the series of natural disasters also attributing to people giving more?
Yeah, I mean, you can look over many Giving USA studies to see the years where we have maybe the more dramatic or damaging natural disasters. Natural disaster giving was certainly up. And I think that points to a couple of things. You know, people in the U.S. in particular, which this is measuring, we do look out for our neighbor. I mean, we care when something happens, and we want to make sure that we can step up. The other thing about natural disaster giving, it's one of the most direct forms of giving to see impact. You know, I see this dramatic flood that took place or fire or hurricane, whatever it was, and I feel that every penny that I give or a significant amount of that is going directly to a specific disaster out there. And so there's that direct line of sight. Sometimes I think when people make gifts to nonprofits, the nonprofits don't always do a great job telling them what their gift went toward. They're great about asking for another gift, but, you know, we have to be just as good in our sector to make sure and demonstrate, what is your gift going for? How many lives am I saving? How many kids am I educating? How many people am I housing? All those important factors, and that's on us as a sector to do a better job of that. And natural disaster giving is a great example of when you do that well, it works.
Speaking of gifting, and when it comes to gifting from your will, do you see an increase of that at all? Because not just for, you know, those that are elderly or seniors, but even young people putting it in their wills now, saying that, okay, if something happens to me, I do want a portion of my money to go to this charity.
Yeah, so I'm a huge proponent of planned giving, and I have the good pleasure of teaching a planned giving course over at the University of St. Thomas, and I made my first charitable plan gift in my will when I was 29 years old.
How about that?
I think people are looking to do that younger and younger. As I say in my class, we're all going to make planned gifts at some point in time. It's just how planful do we want to be? Do we want to say what happens to our last will? at that point in time, or do we want the government or someone else stepping in and saying, here's what I think they wanted to do? And so I hope people do that. You know, planned gifts are usually the largest single gift any individual or family will ever make. It's oftentimes the largest gift any organization will ever receive. So even though it is often the future at some unknown point, we have a huge opportunity with planned gifts to turn the dial on some of these important issues we're all working toward. Nonprofits don't always see that right away because those dollars are deferred. They might be 10, 20, 30 years down the road, and we need the money now. We have homeless kids to feed now. We have people on the streets to house now, all these things. But we do need to lean into planned giving more, I think, than we have before.
You know, every time we read about good news, there's always a revision that you have to go back and see a correction. And there's also mentioned in this research that in 2016, the article states that there was a correction for 2016 from $390.05 billion down to $389.64 billion. Now, that doesn't seem like a whole lot of money, but do you think that this is effective or does it discourage people?
Well, it's a good question. I mean, at the end of the day, I don't think a lot of people pay attention to the big number in terms of how to inform their personal giving. I don't think they look and say, ooh, 5% increase, I should increase my giving 5%. I think they look at their personal giving and say, that organization did a phenomenal job of engaging me, of, you know, reporting what the impact of my gift was. Therefore, I'm going to give maybe 20% more than I did last year. So I think while it's nice to see some of the collective, it's nice to see national trend lines and be able to say, where are we moving as a sector, as a society? Boy, on an individual basis, it's much more important. How did this specific organization do as pertains to my philanthropy? We're very proud at the Community Foundations of having tremendous success, not only helping people achieve whatever their goals are, but often giving away more money than they ever thought they could. And part of that's our strong investment returns. Part of it is helping to communicate impact. But if organizations can do a better job, I think, of communicating the impact of the charitable gifts they're receiving, they'll see far more than whatever GivingUSA says was the amount of growth or increase from the previous year.
Will it also allow or encourage corporations to continue to giving if they hear more, if we're screaming loudly that what you're doing is making such a difference for us? Maybe they will continue to work. Because a lot of times, you know, these nonprofits, they'll move to another charity and not sticking with all of the ones that they've been with for the last 20 years.
Geraldine, I've got a couple of calls and people want to know if the numbers that they are reporting, if the GoFundMe phenomenon is included in there.
So the only numbers that are reported on GivingUSA are giving through 501c3 organizations. And so a lot of the kind of GoFundMe types of things are not charitable deductions. They're just more crowdfunding. Mm-hmm. And so if they're charitable crowdfunding, then yes, it's included in the numbers. But if it's pure crowdfunding where I'm giving $10 or $20 and I'm not worried about a tax deductible gift, then those numbers are not included.
So do you believe, sir, that this giving trend will continue year after year, that we are on an incline?
Oh, I certainly think crowdfunding will continue, and it'll likely increase, especially with the younger generations. They get really excited about kind of rallying together around issues. They feel that collectively they can do far more than any of them could do individually. Mm-hmm. And I think it, you know, the onus is on the nonprofits to be able to say, okay, how can we as an organization, where does this trend belong? Does it belong in our development plans? How can we fit this in? You know, you shouldn't chase after the shiniest carrot out there, but I think everyone should take a look at those things, whether it's online giving, crowdfunding, planned giving, and say, how do we incorporate this into an overall strategy? But I do think crowdfunding is only going to stick around and probably increase.
Final question. Are we losing nonprofits? Are they closing their doors because of these changes?
Can you repeat the question? I didn't quite hear you there.
I'm sorry, sir. Are we losing nonprofits because of some of the changes that have been made, not just in the tax code, but people hearing about, okay, well, I can take my money over here and it can do more work over here, and they change their minds? Are we starting to see nonprofits shutter their doors, particularly in the Twin Cities metro?
Well, I think on any given year, you will see nonprofits close their door. And part of it is exactly what you described. There maybe they aren't doing the best job of indicating to donors what their value is, how they're impacting the community, and sometimes it's through mergers and acquisitions. You see that all the time in the business community, where organizations come together and they say, you know, collectively, again, we can do more than either of us can do individually. Do we need twice the overhead? We have two community foundations, Minnesota and St. Paul Community Foundations, but we have one staff because we know we can have greater impact in community by collaborating together and doing that work. And so I think you will continue to see probably a slow, you know, consolidation of nonprofits, but I don't think it's necessarily for bad reasons. I think sometimes it's for very strategic and positive reasons in the community.
Jeremy Wells, thank you so much for joining us tonight on Father's Day. Are you a father, by the way?
I am. Yep.
Well,
happy
Father's Day. Oh, happy Father's Day, sir.
Thank you again.
All right, good night. All right, we have heard a lot. This is a lot. And the bottom line is there are so many organizations that need us. And every dollar counts. You know, we didn't talk about every dollar, but I've been that woman who have been at a nonprofit event or a charity gala, and I wanted to get to know the organization before I gave. And all of a sudden, something was said or something was done, and I saw the heart of the organization, and I dug deep into my purse, pulled out all the cash I could find in my purse. I think it was $86 and something cents, and put it in an envelope. And what's remarkable, some of these charities now are saying, we will take cash, credit cards, anything you want to give us. We will take that. And so it used to be a time it had to be a credit card or a check, and that was it. Well, times have changed, and there are different ways to give. So don't let anything stop you from giving. If you want to give, you talk to someone, you ask a question, raise your hand if you need to when they're doing the ask, and find a way to make a difference, because it really does. We got to take a break. You're listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. We'll be back in a moment. It is now 8:28 here at WCCO. Welcome back. You're listening to Steele Talking. I'm your host, Geraldine Steele. Of course, we're talking a lot about weather tonight, too, so that's coming up. Stay tuned for the weather forecast, because there is a special weather statement for Hennepin County, and it will tell you all the counties that will be affected. But it looks like we've got a weather watch until 9 p.m. I believe it's still a watch. Do you still have that as well, Shaletta? Okay, so hopefully we will get through this night safely, but our meteorologist, Mike Lynch, has made it pretty clear that we could definitely be in the, you know, we could be seeing some pretty bad thunderstorms tonight, maybe even tornadic, and a tornadic event. So stay tuned to WCCO, an eye to the sky and an ear to WCCO radio. You know, take that portable one, keep it by your bed, get downstairs if you need to, but so far right now we're looking at thunderstorms, so that's good. All right, we're going to take a break here in just a moment, and we'll get to weather after that, and then my next guest that's going to join us is Paul Daniel Rodriguez, and I have this segment called What Do You Do? We're going to find out, what does Paul Daniel Rodriguez do? We'll be back in just a moment. You know what that music means, right? It means that we have found a way to discover new people that are doing something interesting that we've never heard of before. And our producer, Jimmy Erickson, found Paul Daniel Rodriguez. His mission is to create athletic clothing that you are proud to wear around your city, your gym, or your house that celebrates who you are. And that's the interesting thing about this. In addition to our signature styles, he says, we plan to release special edition shirts in partnership with various LGBT charities as a way of giving back. And Paul is joining us tonight. Hi, Paul.
Hello, how's it going?
Hey, it's going well. Did I kind of cover who you are and what you're doing?
Yeah, 100%. You got that right on the dot.
All right, tell us more about how you got involved in all of this. How did you decide to get
here? Yeah, so I'm only 24, and when I came out in college, I found like a great sense of community with LGBTQ sports leagues in the area. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if you're familiar, we have like a massive gay softball league, a massive gay volleyball league.
No, I didn't know.
Yeah, so that's just an area I felt comfortable. I could be myself. And for school, I went for PR and marketing. And I've always just had the skill set with digital design, web design, social media. And I kind of just combined my two skills and my passion and created this project that kind of grew and exploded into something that's been growing.
Kind of?
It sounds like
you're doing just fine.
Yeah, it's been going really well for being open. My store has been open for a little less than a year now.
Wow. Okay, so what has been the response to when people find out who you are and what you're doing and why you're doing it? What do you hear?
Everybody's just been super positive about it. They're just so supportive. It's something, the thing I've created, Prideletics, it's not something that's been created before. The market that I'm focusing on isn't anything that's worked on. So it's just been a lot of support. It's been really great.
You know, you hear about Abletics and so many other things, and something called Prideletics really sticks with me. I mean, as soon as I heard the name, I just thought, oh, this is a cool idea. So what has your family said about all of this? Were they worried about how people might discourage you, or you might get really terrible tweets from people, or, you know, the trolls on social media? Were they worried about it at all?
No. My family's been super supportive about it, as have my friends. My parents are actually down in Wisconsin still, so I don't really talk to them that often about the business. But my friends have just been so supportive about it. Actually, I haven't really dealt with any online bullying or
negative comments at all.
Yeah.
Well, that is fantastic.
So
do you feel like you've hit all of your milestones? Do you feel like, especially for the first year, do you think you've done all that you wanted to do, or did you go past it?
No, I think I've been doing really, really great. Most recently, I paired up with a national nonprofit, Athlete Ally. I don't know if you've heard of them, but they're the largest LGBTQ nonprofit in the sporting world, and they're focused on ending homophobia and transphobia. So we formed a partnership for this Pride Month, and we created limited edition tanks and tees, and $5 of every shirt goes right back to them. So for me, being my own business, just running by myself at 24, and being able to partner with this massive organization has been mind-blowing for me.
Well, it's mind-blowing for a whole lot of people, and I think what you're doing is quite remarkable. Sometimes it just takes one person to really make that difference, doesn't it? And you stepped forward and said, I'm going to do this, not only because you needed it, but you knew how many others needed it as well. So are you only offering the athletic wear, or do you have so much more, cups, hats, backpacks, and more with your logo on it?
Yeah, so right now it's tanks and tees. I just released a hat, but I'm more focused on releasing stuff strategically. So once the fall starts coming in, we're going to have hoodies and sweatpants and stuff like that. But right now I'm kind of just focused on like the summer vibe stuff.
So this is on the eve of the week of Pride. You know, this is Pride week, and this is a really big deal. Are you going to have a great presence there?
All my friends are going to be wearing shirts. I'm going to be wearing my shirt every single day I'm going out. So. Yeah.
I mean, are they giving you a platform? What does it take to become a vendor at, you know, a Pride event, you know, to really bring something forward? Is this your first year wearing your T-shirts and that sort of thing, and you actually have a kiosk or something?
Yeah, so I don't actually have a kiosk this year, but, for example, there was a gay softball tournament here a couple weekends ago, and I was able to have my products there. I had some discount cards to hand out, stuff like that. But for this Pride, I don't have anything prepared yet, but I did work with some people that do have booths. My friend Chris just started there's a gay flag football league starting up in Minneapolis as of this year. And he reached out to Prideletics to help create shirts that they're going to wear at their booth, which also works because Prideletics is obviously about sports.
Mm-hmm. Could you see, you know, some of your logo actually at, you know, other national sports events? You know, you've got soccer going on right now, which is really, really huge. It's the biggest game in the world. And, of course, you've got the Olympics and so much more. Could you ever imagine, or are you working towards seeing if you can get Prideletics to any of the major sports events?
That would be incredible. I think one of my main, like, an amazing goal of mine would be having one of these super famous LGBT athletes wearing some of my stuff. So I think of Gus Kenworthy from the Olympics, Adam Rippon, people like them. If I saw them in my gear representing who we are as a community, that I would be ecstatic about it.
It just seems like it has wings, you know what I mean? Who would you say is your closest competitor?
Closest competitor? Right now, what I'm doing specifically is there aren't any companies that are showing athletic LGBT clothing in like a simple, clean kind of way. If I were to think of a competitor in like a more national aspect, some larger corporations right now are releasing their Pride clothing lines for the month. But the thing with those is that they only do it for June, whereas mine is all year round.
Right. You know, you mentioned that you are from Wisconsin, that your family always supported you. But on your website, when it talks about who you are, what it's all about, you said, moving to Minneapolis showed me a new world. It saved me.
So I came from a smaller town in Wisconsin. It was kind of hard growing up. I got bullied fairly often in high school and whatnot, and I decided to make a big jump and come to Minneapolis. I went to the U, and I was like, Minneapolis is one of the most LGBT-friendly places that I know of that's near. And I thought it would be better for me to just explore this new option, meet new people. And honestly, in the 6 years I've been here, it's been the best decision I've ever made.
Wow, incredible. So here you are about to really step out there on faith, you know, and make your brand known even more. Where do you see yourself in about 5 years?
Oh, man. In that time frame, I'm hoping that I'll have a team with me helping out with all of Prideletics. Right now, I do all the social media, all the design. I have people help out with the photo shoots. I pick friends for models. But if I had a team to help me out, a team to help me write press releases, a team to help me design new things, come up with ideas, that would be amazing.
Yeah, you're going to need a team, dude. You keep going like this, and on shows like WCCO Radio, you're going to need a team. So I hope you will be you will be ready. And by the way, the Prideletics logo, I just love it, and I hope to see more of it on a lot of your wear. And when it comes to sizes, is it for big people, small people, you get all sizes?
So big, big range. We have extra small all the way to 4XL.
Wow.
All inclusive.
Wow. Well, I encourage people to really check out the website. Give us the website so people know where to go.
Yep, it's just prideletics.com. So it's the word pride mixed with athletics.
Yeah, prideletics.com, and you just hit shop, and you can go shopping. He also has a blog on here that kind of tells exactly what he's thinking, where he's been, and that sort of thing. So congratulations to you, man. It's not easy
starting
a new business. It's not easy getting out there and putting your heart and soul into it. Are you working now full-time and doing this?
Yeah, so I have a full-time job, and I work 40 hours a week, and as soon as I'm done with that at whatever, 4 or 5 o'clock, I come home and sit on my personal laptop and just start cranking away on Prileutics.
Well, I know you're going to have a great time this week, and I do wish you great success. I hope you sell a lot of product, okay?
Thank you so much.
All right, take care of yourself, Paul.
Bye now.
That is Paul Daniel Rodriguez. And again, his name of his company is Prideletics, and you just go to prideletics.com, read about them, look at their products, and see if it's something you know someone that you can bless them with this. And I love the logo. I hope he will have much more on his website with that logo on it. I thought that was really cool. So congratulations to him. You know, I'm always amazed when Minnesotans just stand up, not just Minnesotans, when Americans stand up and just say, this is what I am working on, and this is what I'm going to do. This is what I was put here to do. And I'm amazed at that.
He is so passionate. I loved his spirit.
Oh my goodness.
He's so passionate.
Yes. I think he's a little scared too, but you know, fear is not going to stop this man. It's just not going to stop him.
No.
So, I'm looking forward to hearing more. So we're going to take a break and then come back, and we're going to open up the phone lines to you, by the way. 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226, because it is Pride Week. And I want to know, what are we doing as Minnesotans? What are you planning? How do you handle it when you're a teenager, 15 years old, comes to you, or 16 years old, and says, I want to go to Pride Week. I've never been. I have some friends that I'm supporting. I have, you know, I believe in the LGBTQ community. I want to support them, and I want to go. And I know, Dad and Mom, you may not want me to go, but I'm ready to go, because you don't know what they're going to see or do. But it's Pride Week, and they want to participate in that pride. What do you say to that young person? If there is a student in your class that really wants to go, and you're a little worried about them, that things get a little crazy, worried about that they could get around people with drugs. I mean, are you thinking like that? Or are you saying to yourself, baby, go? Because I had that incident in my family where one of my nieces really, really wanted to go at the age of 16, and her parents didn't think she was mature enough to go. So they were not happy when her and a few of her friends decided to meet up downtown and participate. They didn't think she could handle it. And I still don't think she could handle it, because some things happened that night and it could have really gotten her in trouble. But she was able to escape that. It's called grace and mercy, y'all. Grace and mercy. So our children, when do we know that they are mature enough to participate in something like Pride, and to really know and trust their God voice, trust that voice to say, don't go left, go right? Because any festival, any big time parade or that sort of thing, there are always other things going on. And I'm not saying it's dangerous. I'm just saying, for a 16-year-old that might be a little naive, what do you say to them? Do you say, hey, I'm really looking forward to you getting involved? Or how do you enter into the conversation? 651-989-9226. We'll be back in a moment. It is now. now, 8:47 here at WCCO. Welcome back to Steele Talkin'. I am your host, Geralyn Steele. The phone lines are open at 651-989-9226 or 1-866-989-9226. When do you think it's time to take your child to a pride parade or pride event? That's whether your child is LGBTQ or not. Maybe they are just curious. Maybe there are family members they want to go and support, or you want them to be there. What if you want to take your 12-year-old? What if you want to send your 16-year-old? How do you prepare for something like that? 651-989-9226. What is your game plan for this week with Pride Week beginning tomorrow in the Twin Cities? Can you imagine? And with the current political vibe, it can be a real challenge. We don't know what can happen. This can be anywhere, and I'm not trying to scare anybody off at all. If I was in Minnesota, I would be at the Pride event, at least one. But I'm in Boston, having a great time, by the way, with my family. I'm so glad I'm here and that I'm able to help out. Boy, did my daughter need the help. Boy. I ask for your prayers for her. She is so close to becoming Dr. Ajibodu. So please pray for her. All right, that was a side note. But let's get back to this. Should you take your child to a pride parade? If not, why not? Is it something that you're afraid of? Did you ever go to a pride parade? Did your parents ever allow you to do it? Did you have to sneak out to see it? Now, I have been driving where I ran into a pride parade and didn't know I was, I didn't know the route. And I, you know, rolled the windows down. It was, you know, in support and, you know, honking my horn and all of that to let them know I support you. But I've never been to a Minnesota Pride Parade ever. Now, in other states I have. You know, I didn't get to stay long, but at least I got to see and participate a little bit. So I just wonder, for those of us who believe that, you know, the LGBTQ community is important, that they do deserve their rights that they have, and, you know, or whether you don't agree with it, but maybe you have a loved one. And you know that teenager is gay, or you know that, and you accept and love them. How would you know when it's the right time to take them to a pride parade? Because it's a challenge. You just never know, right? And as a parent, you got one opportunity to get it right. It's not like you can make that decision when they're 15 years old or 16 years old, and then all of a sudden, you know, 20 years down the road, you say, oh, man, I really screwed that up. But it's okay. They'll get over it. Sometimes they don't get over it. But there's no perfect manual to parenting, right? So we go with our gut. I remember my mother used to say, you know, my brothers wanted to go to a party or something when they were teenagers. And my mother would say, no, you can't go to that party. And they say, why not, Mom? Why can't we go? She said, because I said so. And later in life, my mother has explained what I said so really means. It simply means I don't know why. All I know is my gut is telling me no. And once my brothers wanted to go, and they were really upset with Mom and Dad for not letting them go, come to find out that there was a raid on that party that night. So sometimes we don't know why we say no. But then there are other times that maybe it's our own biases that speak to us. Maybe it's not that mother's intuition or that father's intuition that's stirring and telling us, maybe not tonight, maybe next year or maybe next time. But it's got to be a real trip for parents to say, okay, it's time. My son never asked me to go to Pride Parade. I have never had, neither one of my children have ever asked me to go to Pride Parade. But if they had, I would have. I remember taking my son and my daughter when they were, oh my gosh, I believe Venice was 13, and so that would have put Michael at 10. Or either she was 12 and he was 9, something like that. And my gay sister, who has been with her partner now for 28 years, can you believe that? It's so awesome. And they were living out in California, and I decided to take my children to introduce them to my sister-in-law. Even though they weren't married, they weren't allowed to marry at the time. They had been together for so long. And I had one sibling say to me, are you sure you want to do that? And I said, absolutely. I want them to know and love her. And if this is a mistake, then that's something I'm going to have to deal with. But for me, in my household, I need to let them know who their family is and that it's okay to love your family because your family loves you. It was a big chance that I took And maybe some people would think, I don't think I would have done that. But that's okay. For me, that was the decision I had to make. So if you are trying to walk these waters and, you know, gingerly figure out how in the world am I going to deal with my teenager on this, or my preteen who says, okay, mom and dad, why not we go as a family? Why can't we go as a family? When I was growing up when my children were growing up, I would also let them watch certain movies, right? PG-13 and R-rated. I just didn't go that far. But they wanted to watch certain movie series and that sort of thing. And I said, okay, we'll watch it, but we're going to watch it together. And we're going to stop and talk about it. We're going to make sure that we ask the questions and have the conversation. So I wouldn't let them watch it without one of their parents sitting there with them to have that conversation. And to this day, my children talk about that. They say, oh, God, Mom, you wouldn't let us watch anything without you guys. I'm like, yeah, because to me it's really important what you're feeding into your brain. Remember, we are a collection of all that we take in, all of it, right? So if you're thinking about it and you're not quite sure about it, read as much as you can about parents who made the decision or those who took a chance and walked out on faith, like I did. And I believe I did the right thing. So I encourage you, do the right thing. Have the conversation. Don't let someone else introduce it to them without you knowing about it. You have the conversation first. I cannot see how that's a bad idea. Shaletta, do you think that's a bad idea?
I think it depends on each child and the family situation and the parents. And, you know, everybody's got a story to tell. But I think that whatever your children do, I just love the way that you support your children and your son and your daughter. And, you know, watching your testimony of support, unconditional love, makes me a better parent.
Well, that's very kind of you. But let me tell you, my parents were incredible. And even though there were things my mother would never let us go to, you know, I mean, for God's sake, I couldn't even wear pants till I was 21 years old and married. Seriously, we couldn't even play. I couldn't wear pants to play sports at school. I mean, it was just these restrictions, these religious restrictions at the time.
Mm-hmm.
So I ran from that as soon as I could. You know, I didn't want those kind. I didn't understand that type of constriction. What does pants have to do with anything, you know? But boy, you know, my parents had a tough time with some of the conversations we brought up. And we would come home from church and all sit around that dinner table. And boy, did we have great discussions. Our parents gave us a free, safe haven, right? We could come into that to that table, and that was where it all, you let it all out. You screamed, you cried, you hollered, you asked questions, you asked for their support, and you got it. And so I'm really grateful for that. And there were times when my parents were pretty surprised with what we came up with, you know? Like my granddaughter, who's not even 6 years old, she's 5 years old, she said today, I swear, and then she changed and said, you know, what I'm saying is I'm really serious, Grandma. I said, wait, who told you that word? I swear I'm going to go somewhere. I swear I'm going to do something. No. Tell me, how did that come about, right? So now we got to sit down and have that conversation. She wasn't happy about that. She was like, ooh, I'm exposed. Yeah, that's right, honey. Your grandmother's going to catch it, and your mother's going to catch you every time. At least we hope we do. So for those of you that are listening and you're worried and you're wondering, okay, the week is going to start. You're going to see a whole lot of things in the downtown areas. Now what? Be bold and be supportive and find a way to have the conversation. It doesn't mean that you have to agree with everything, but it does mean that we need to deal with it before someone else gives them an understanding that you don't want them to have. Like I've always said, when it comes to education, the children get one education in the classroom and they get a whole nother education on the bus. And any of us who have put our children on a bus, we know this to be true, right? They come home and they talk about things you never thought would come up on a bus. But sometimes those conversations lead to things that we need to talk about anyway. So deal with it. Don't hide from it. You know, don't say, you know, this, we don't want this to happen. No. It's time to have the conversation. All right, we're going to take a break and come back with Center Stage next right here on WCCO Radio. Listen to WCCO.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.